I'm Pooja Appana, and today I'm talking with my friend Mina. Listener, welcome to Woodside Lane.
Pooja, like, amongst, like, a swarm of, like, brown people, just, like, in a dining hall, and I, like, walked over to her, and I was, and, like, she was with a group of people, walked over, and, like, all of them were, like, all extremely high, and, like, just really, like, out of it, and then there was just Pooja, who was just, like, you could just tell from, like, the second you walked in that she's just, like, her shit was just a little too together, and, like, everybody else was just, like, not there, like, comparatively, and I was just like, damn, she's scary. So, honestly, I thought you were really scary.
Wow. That is so interesting.
Was that even the question that you were asking? I was just trying to give some more context to the people.
Right. Know? No, that was not even a question, but, like, whoa. I did not even know that's how you saw me in the beginning.
Babe, that's how everyone sees you.
That's terrifying. I don't know. I don't know about that. But I think what I really wanted to talk about today, first off, was, like, you growing up in Westchester.
Yes.
Being one of the only, you know, colored people there. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, Westchester is a very interesting place because it's not, I think there's, like, two different types of, like, white towns. There's, like, white Christian America, and that's, like, the quintessential, like, you, they don't know where, like, Huron is. You know what I'm saying? There's, like, that. Like, they couldn't point to stuff on a map. You know what I'm saying? Which, again, really, it's, but it's, like, a lot of, like social issues and, like, educational issues and whatever access to education stuff in America that we just don't have. Beautiful. But then there's also, like, a secondary type of racism, which is, like, white people that are very rich and very well educated but also still proceed to be racist, and that is quintessentially Westchester, quintessentially Scarsdale. The town is, like, white and Jewish as well, so the population was also interesting in the fact that they, like, were liberal to some degree but also were very, like, right-wing on international issues, like, issues that affect my family back in Iran, for example. And so, like, I remember, like, very early on, like, this, like, the little, like, I don't really know what the word is. Like, I guess, like, a lot of people, because I was the only Muslim in my school, as well as the only Middle Eastern person in my entire school, like, a lot of people just, like, come to me, like, to ask me political questions. And I'm like, sir, like, I'm, like, what is this? You know what I'm saying? And, of course, like, I would do it because I'm just, like, based like that.
Right.
Like, but, like, at the same time, it was, like, I just was constantly, like, asked to, like, be, like,
like a spokesperson.
Like a spokesperson for, like, stuff that wasn't even my issue. Like, some person asked me one time, like, what my thoughts on India, Pakistan are. I'm like, bruh. Like, I ain't that. Like, neither of those things. Like, but, like, you know what I'm saying? I just think that because you're there, to them, it's, like, that is a, I don't know. I don't know what the word is. Like, I, you know, like, you're owing people information like that, or it's, like, your responsibility and stuff, which I also think is just weird.
Right. And, you know, especially living in that type of environment, like, I think I grew up in a sort of similar, maybe not as rich, but I grew up in a predominantly, you know, white town, especially before I moved to Bridgewater. And definitely not having people to relate to me, and not even just that, but not having other people to kind of speak about these sort of issues made me kind of the spokesperson, and frankly just made me a little uncomfortable. So I guess, like, also another thing is also with you being Muslim too, like, did that really come up often, or was it just more like, oh, you're just a colored person and I'm just gonna ask you about all colored people issues?
Well, yeah, actually that came up a lot. I think also it came up later in my, like, life as well, too, like, post-middle school to high school, because I think a lot of kids in my school went to, like, a lot of Jewish institutions that were funded by, like, Israel, and so a lot of kids would go on birthright to Israel, and, like, all of these sort of, like, I don't know, I guess, like, I mean, how would you know, like, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, a lot of these, like, students would like come to me later on about like the issue of like Israel-Palestine. Like a lot of them would like ask me questions about that, or like I don't know. It was just very strange, because I guess as people grew up, like I was always very informed of like political issues, just because that's literally the reality of just like being someone from Iran. Like it's like based off of literally what the president decides tomorrow is how I'm going to be able to like move back and forth, right?
So actually I have a really interesting point about that. Yeah, you said before that you were born in New York, but you said that's someone who is based from Iran. So do you identify more with being an American from New York or an Iranian, which I can kind of tell what your answer is based on what you said, but...
this is the thing. I don't necessarily, like, yes, I'm, like, a New Yorker, which is also kind of gross to say when I'm from Westchester, right? But, like, I think I, especially growing up and seeing how little American I'm necessarily allowed to have because of my Iranian citizenship, like, I can never truly... like take all of the privileges of being an American. Therefore, it's just very difficult for me to take on that identity. Like if I know other people of color that like are able to say they're American because the US government doesn't like sanction the living crap like out of their people and like starve their people. You know what I'm saying? Like let's say you're from, I don't really know, what's a country that the US doesn't really give much of a fuck about, which is actually very difficult to think of. But my point is that like, let's say you are someone from India that doesn't necessarily have, like, the Indian government and the U.S. government don't really have very many issues in that regard, right? I think it's a little easier for someone of that background to say, well, okay, like, I'm an American.
So you feel like America has done a lot towards Iran.
Absolutely. And so it's, like, almost disgusting to be, like, an Iranian person and then actively, like, put like a US flag in your bio. Like that's a whole thing, but like no one does that because it's fucking disgusting. My father is a professor, and he had issues with like trying to get tenureship and like a variety of like job related issues because he's Iranian. Like I can't apply for a variety of jobs because the second I click an application and then they ask me whether I'm a citizen of Iran, North Korea, or Venezuela, I have to click that. And therefore I'm just not gonna be able to be seen by an employer. So it's like, it's not even just like, oh yeah, like it sucks because like a kid called me a terrorist one time. Like I don't really give a fuck at that point. But it's more of like, yeah, it's like the literal like issue of like moving in the world, in the job market, in like life, because of just literally where you're from.
Yeah, which is also why I know for you activism is a massive part. And because you also have interned at NBC, I do want to ask you a question about that. As far as activism and, you know, major newspaper sources, do you have a take on that, or like, kind of, I know you had a little bit of experience in that, so
journalism, especially domestic journalism, is not made for the activists. Like, it's not made for someone that actually has opinions, quite frankly. Especially because, like, of the way that the internet has shaped, like, what is newsworthy now.
Right.
It's almost nearly impossible to get something published, especially like an international-related political article published. Like, for example, in the very beginning of my internship at NBC, there was like extreme flooding in Syria, in like Idlib, in Aleppo, and all of these places that people used to, you know, talk about and know. And so I wrote this article because hundreds of thousands of people were displaced.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed people that worked at the White Helmets, which is basically the Red Cross of Syria. They were basically talking about how the entire country is starving.
Right.
No major news report like outlet has done any work on it. I bring this up to them and they're like, no. They just go, no, with a little heart. And it's not even their fault. It's the system's fault, essentially. Like, no one really wants to click on that when you can get your newest COVID numbers. You know what I'm saying? It's just,
sensationalism, essentially.
Absolutely. And so it's so difficult, like, because I care about these things and whatever, to find that niche where I can actually do that. And that's why I got so frustrated with just doing regular like domestic news, because that's just not what people want, like, period.
Right. And you know, the thing is, having that little pull between doing something that you're genuinely passionate about, example, you know, activism for me would be something like, you know, just trying to be a good person, even in business. That's a really difficult thing for me to do, especially when it's all about making money, right? It's extremely hard, you know, especially when what people want to click on is like just breaking news. Being a woman in journalism as well.
Mm-hmm.
How is your experience with that too?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess it just depends, because like I think I started journalism like in high school. Like I did my, like I was editor-in-chief of my high school's newspaper. And literally starting then, like the issues began, like again, because my school was predominantly white. So I remember the day where I was like, I think it was junior year, and then they pick the leadership staff for like the senior year, right? And I remember when I got it, this other kid whose brother had been the editor-in-chief of the same student newspaper, who also interviewed for the role of editor-in-chief for that senior year, he was denied it, and then I got it, right? So he went around the entire school saying that the only reason that I got my editor-in-chief role is because it was like a diversity quota that my school had to fill. Even though there's like it doesn't even make any sense, because the entire leadership board was still white. Like you know what I'm saying? So it's just like even from like the very like start of it, like that's just kind of how it is. And so like I think a lot of people just like, and I hate to be like, oh, yes, you should just, you know, like, fight it or whatever, or, like, just not care, because it does affect the way you do things. Like, I know that there's certain things that I could never really say, because the way that people will view it, they'll view me as, like, the angry POC person.
No, you know? Exactly. No, that was actually a big thing. I learned something, and I learned something very early on, is that because I'm a girl and because I'm brown, I have to be careful what I say, but especially... The girl thing was a bigger thing for me, I think. And definitely in Westchester, it sounds like it was probably more the race thing. Mm. But yeah, it was, there were some things I could not say because I could not get away with it. Mm. And it just makes you a lot more careful. Mm. And it makes you feel like you have to sit there and you have to work harder.
Yeah.
And you have to be more perfect and you can't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that barrier was really hard to overcome for me, mm-hmm. specifically.
Like, growing up, like, I genuinely did not think, like, I was attractive. Like, at all. Like, literally at all. Because I just was, I was surrounded by people that their, I guess, like, definition of, like, I guess, like, a valuable human, which is, like, fucked, right? But, like, it wasn't necessarily, like, I don't know, someone like me. But then I also grew up and realized, holy shit, like, I am just the skinny white bitch that I always hated, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I also can be both of those things, and so like that was really difficult. But like I didn't think of myself as attractive in high school or middle school or whatever, because like I guess like who is gonna really tell you that besides like, for me, like, right, I'm straight, so like I guess a dude, right? Like, but like also that's just like I just never really, that's not something that happened for me right then. Yeah. And so I got to college and I realized, oh wait, my town is just white, right? And then like, and it also was really bad because it didn't prepare me for like the real world. So in many cases, like, I also think that like, I don't know, because I just assumed that like I wasn't attractive in like the male gaze sort of way. When I got to college, I was put in a lot of vulnerable situations because I didn't know that was like the intention of a man, because I didn't think that was something that would apply to me, because I didn't think I was like attractive in that regard. I don't know if that's making any sense.
No, it is, because yeah. I also, same way. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up in a very, I guess, Eurocentric beauty standard. Like, my town had a very Eurocentric beauty standard as well. So when I came to college, I just did not expect guys to like me. I just didn't. I walked in, and it makes you kind of, I don't know. Like, for me, looking back, I wish I was a little more careful, I guess you could say. But being put in those uncomfortable situations is also a big learning experience, at least for me. Like, yeah. I remember, like, Like, I never thought, like, the movies of, like, guys harassing girls would ever happen to me.
Same. No, I thought that was, like, I thought that, I didn't think that was real. Like, and I know it's so fucked, like, right? Like, obviously, like, yes, sexual assault is a very real thing. And, like, sexual harassment is a very real thing. Myself, I know. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And so, like, I just, and I, because I was never really, like, fearful of, like, men in that way, because I just knew, like, well, no white man's gonna like me, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I just assumed that. I just assumed that, like, that sort of thing just didn't happen. And so when I got to college and I was put in a lot of vulnerable situations because I didn't know that that was something I had to protect myself against, that really sucked. And I wasn't prepared. And I don't think there's anything to really prepare you for that, especially just being a woman. It's just, like, kind of how it is.
Yeah. Unless you go through it, I don't think you're actually prepared for it.
Yeah.
And at least for me, my response was to be terrifying, I guess, for lack of better words. It was to make myself seem like I had a bulletproof vest in front of me, which isn't the best as well at, like, forming even just friendships, you know? When people see you as this, like, unbreakable sort of human being, it puts a weird dynamic as far as relationships go. But that's how I dealt with a lot of that type of stuff. And even to this day, I feel like I still have this, like, shield. It's, like, only when you get, like, really, get to really know me after, like, years is when you really kind of, I guess, get back to the old Pooja. Mm. I feel like I kind of created, like, a shield around her that was kind of, like, yeah, unbreakable unless you stick around for a bit.
I'm more of, like, a flight kind of person, you know what I'm saying? I'm just gonna, like, get out of there, you know what I'm, which is also bad because there's plenty of times where you can't really just get out of there. And so, like, I don't know, I guess, like, being in that situation is much more difficult. But I guess, like, what you're saying is that, like, if you scare the living crap out of straight men, like, I guess, like, you're in a better situation overall, you know?
I mean, I hate to be this person too, but, like, I go to business school and I'm around straight men a lot.
Absolutely.
They just get scared by the fact that, I guess, women know things. I remember this really one time. Yeah. Damn. I mean, for lack of better words, I mean, yeah. Like,
yeah.
I remember I was, it was like first or second day at NYU. And this guy sitting there and was trying to mansplain stocks to me. Like, I've known about stocks since I was 12 years old. I listened to Bloomberg Radio every single morning with my dad and discuss gas prices going up because of shortages going around the world. And I was sitting there and he was explaining this, like, crap to me, frankly. And I looked at him and I was like, you're wrong. And he's like, what? And then I start here and I start showing him, like, all these different statistics. And I'm like, so this is why you're wrong? Next time, don't try to explain something to me that you do not know.
Holy fuck.
Since that day, he stopped. And we're still friends now. I know him very well now. But he'll never tell anyone that story. Mm. But that's how it started. I think that's how I started scaring the living crap out of guys. It wasn't because I was, like, anything, like, crazy. It was just those little moments that I had with them of one-on-one time that they were like, oh, shit. Mm. Wrong girl. Let's go back to when you were, like, a freshman coming to NYU, the big city. You know, I know you came from Westchester. I came from Bridgewater. It's only really an hour away. Mm. But life here is so different. So, like, if you had to, like, I don't know, go back and talk to yourself when you were a freshman, what would you kind of talk to yourself about?
I guess, like, I don't know. I'd probably just say, like, you have more value than you think you do. Like, I think just because you come from, like, I don't know, like, suburbs, like, it's kind of how it be, like, you come from a white suburb, and especially if you are, like, we were just talking about, like, if you're, like, a brown person, I guess you just feel like you can't do much, because you're literally in an environment where you can't say much, where you can't, like, express yourself enough or whatever, or, like, even the work you do is not really that valued because you're just assumed to be good at things because you're, like, I don't know, Asian or some shit, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I guess for me, like, the one thing I honestly regret about, like, my freshman year was sort of just, I don't know, I guess, like, not recognizing the value of, like, what I produce. And obviously now I see it, right? But, like, at the time, I think, like, I just accepted abuse from people that were, like, sort of older than me or people that necessarily, I don't know. I mean, firstly, white people, like white men in power, I just, you know, I had to deal with them because I just wanted to get enough stories so I can get to the next thing. Like, that's just sort of how it is. Like when you're trying to like move up in a career, right? It's like you do the most amount of work, the most amount of grunt work to get to the next thing. And while I think there's value in doing that, I also think there's a certain limit of that you can do before you're not respecting yourself no more. And I think that's something I would like tell myself is like to recognize the value of what, like, not only you produce, but just yourself. You
know? Right. And because at the end of the day, if you don't value yourself, no one else is going to. Like, they will continue to overwork you, especially if you're that young, bright-eyed girl, like, coming into the work field. I think, you know, I know myself, I'm willing to do a bunch of work. But I think the reason I'm starting, you know, this podcast and doing all my other, like, little projects is because I would like to get a point where I work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to work for somebody else because I know I can do the work and I know I can do it properly. But frankly, I can't trust someone above me to give me the credit I deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really the ticker for me.
Mm.
Like, if I were to go back to, and tell, I would tell myself that.
Mm.
Is that, like, especially in these type of fields, like journalism, like business,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you don't advocate for yourself, it becomes a massive problem. And I think, at least me, I was conditioned as a girl to just maybe be a little more quiet, to not ask for too much. And also maybe, also as an immigrant family, too. Like, we're taught to just work and not ask for too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just funny the fact that now I'm probably one of the most demanding people I know. But, yeah, how was, like, that? Did you ever experience that, like, sort of mentality growing up in an immigrant family?
I think earlier on that was sort of how they were. Like, especially because, like, I mean, I don't think my parents are necessarily sexist.
Right.
But I do think that they are... I don't know, I guess conditioned to some extent. They're from Iran, right? Like, there's certain cultural norms and, like, gender norms that, like, were fulfilled then.
Right.
Like, my both my parents were arranged, married at a very young age. Like, those sort of things are not really, like, easily breakable. And so, like, with me, like, I have an older brother. And so, like, they sort of just use him as, like, a test bunny. But then also, I am second, right? And so they, and, like, a lot of the privileges that they would sort of give him were not necessarily applicable to me because it's like, okay, how late can Mina come, like, go out to the point where, like, is it concerning, like, about her safety and stuff like that? So, like, for them, it's like there was, like, a little fine line that they had to, like, keep crossing. But I think over time, as I grew up, they sort of, like,
learned,
I think.
I mean, yeah, my parents are both immigrant parents. Yeah. Like, It's not necessarily sexist as it is the way that they grew up. You know, my mom was the youngest of six, and she had four sisters above, and there's just certain things that you're not supposed to do, right? It's obviously rooted in safety and all that, but in America, where safety is not as big of an issue as it is in Mauritius or probably in Iran, it seemed very unfair to me growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, being very upset at them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously coming to New York and kind of understanding, it's just something that you kind of have to, I guess, help your parents grow through and help yourself grow through as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there's also comes a little bit of a conditioning with that as well. You know, I think I'm a little more scared than I would have been if I was a guy, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like, whenever I walk with a dude, I'm like, this is incredible. Like, wow, this is incredible. Like, and also, mind you, like, that's another thing that, like, pisses me off, too, when people are like, oh, yes, well, like, Iran must be so backwards and stuff like that. Like, in many cases, I feel way more safe in Iran than I do, like, in the U.S. at night. Like, absolutely.
That is interesting. Any day,
because I have a community of people on the same street, family members, mm-hmm. like, people that I can actually go to. Who the fuck do I have here? Genuinely. Who do you really have? And so, like... And so sometimes when I, like, walk around at night with, like a dude or, like, one of my friends, right, it's just, it's crazy to me because I'm like, wow, I could just be, like this. Like, I could go on my, like, night runs, like,
I know.
And stuff. That'd be crazy.
We were talking about that, yeah. About the night runs.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, Mina.
Oh, yeah, I used to go on night runs a lot until I had one really horrifying experience where I was chased to the point where I was like, that's not smart. And then...
Yeah.
I started doing morning runs, also had a really poor experience on a morning run. So then I just said,
Stick to midday.
Now. Now is my time. It doesn't matter if it's like 99 degrees outside. It's fine. I guess I'll just do that now because I don't know. I was literally followed home by like an officer, like a police officer, like dead ass. Like I remember I was walking. It wasn't even that late. It was like 5 p.m. I'm walking back from Washington Square Park. And I, like, you know how you feel the presence behind you of just, like eyes and, like, whatever? So I turn around to this guy, like, one of the officers with his little sunglasses on, douchebag-looking ass. And, like, I look at him, and I'm like, that's kind of sus, but, like, I'm just going to keep on moving with my life. So I'm walking, and then I feel him walking. I walk faster. He's walking faster. And so I was so stressed, like, about where I was going that I just, like, because I didn't want to go by my home. I didn't want this man to follow me to there. Yeah. So I had to, like, keep walking over to, literally, Tompkins. I walked from Washington Square Park to Tompkins.
That's such a far, and he, like, followed you
He followed me, like, up until Avenue A, like, at the entrance of Tompkins, and then just stopped.
Huh?
And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and, like, what do you do then? Like, where the fuck do you go, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, that was really annoying. I don't know why I'm bringing that up, but my point is that it's just very difficult. It's very difficult because, like, if the people you're supposed to apparently call if a other random person on the street and engaged in that same bullshit is also engaging in the same bullshit, I'm like, what the fuck do you do? Until like literally a couple months ago, quite frankly. Like I just would say yes to literally everything, be friends with a bunch of random people, which quite honestly, like, I don't really know much of these people anymore, but like I just really want to, like, freshman year. And like even beyond that, like even until like recently on, like especially after people were vaccinated, I just like would just go and I don't know, throw myself out for just for the sake of doing so. And I realized, like, wait, this isn't bringing me that much joy. Like, I don't really have to be doing this right now. And so
right.
I think, like,
it's just that need to be less lonely, right?
Yeah. So I guess, like, over time, like, I just realized that, like, I find way more value in, like, a select, like, amount of people. And so, like, I think that has made it easier, right, to, like, handle, like, other things, too. Because, like, I know that I have this, like, support group of people that, like, I value. And I think each and every one of them is, like, an incredibly just, like, valuable and great human being. And so for that reason, it's, like, I guess easier because, like, the selection of those people has, you know, decreased. And so that has been good, I guess.
But yeah, no, I literally was the same type of person.
Mm.
Even until very recently, I was that type of person to just go and talk to everybody and anybody. And I think at some point I was like, I can't do this. It's too many people. It's too many thoughts. It's too many, like, just too many things to remember. And I like to be a kind and considerate friend, so, like, obviously, like, I want to remember things about you. And I hate to use this word, but I, like, have a criteria at right now of my friends. Which is, yeah, I hate to use that word because it sounds like a big thing.
Right.
But really, like, if you really dig into it, it's really not. Right. Like, I just want friends that inspire me. I want friends who I look at and I'm like, wow, like, I feel like you're such a good person, and not even, like, morally wonderful, but also just, like, in life, whether it's in your work, whether it's in, you know, specific things that you like to do, whether it's even, like, in a hobby. I just like passion and inspiration and just good, you know? And I took out all the people in my life who I felt like did not match my moral standards. And, you know, I'm not saying they're bad people or anything like that. That's not, you know, at all my intention. But I think just aligning and surrounding myself with the people that I feel like inspire me it's honestly the reason that I'm able to do all these things, you know. Yeah. All these businesses, all these sort of side projects I'm doing are because the people around me have supported me. And they're the ones who I'm doing it with. And they're really good and they're really respectful and they're good people. So, you know, with you, like, I bet, like, you know, even with you, like, I'm extremely inspired by you. Like, this is also why. I know you don't like me sitting here and saying nice things. But, yeah, it's extremely inspiring. I think, like, having that type of, you know, thought process whenever I meet someone has definitely made me a little more picky, but definitely a lot more fulfilled.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't really think I have like a criteria necessarily in the same regard, but it's more of just like after I hang out with that person, like, am I more drained or am I like more content or like relaxed afterwards? I think is like a good marker or indicator of like a solid human being. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're expending a lot of energy, like, and I'm not saying like it's you shouldn't put energy into people, right, but I think to like to the point where you are personally like unsettled by the fact that you just expended that much, like, you know what I'm saying? I think it's just like is like good, you know? Because I come back from like hangouts with like people, and I'm like, why the fuck am I so tired right now? And it's not because like someone did hard drugs or some shit like that. Like, it's not even that. It's literally just like the thought, like the amount of thinking I had to do in order to like insert energy into a conversation with someone that just does not reciprocate that same energy back, you know what I'm saying, is like, that's just not a good marker of like a, like, I guess like a good person really, if they're not like willing to give you the same energy back, right? So then you come back and you're like, why the fuck am I so tired? But it's also like because you carried a conversation for like 6 hours, you know, like shit like that. Where
no, it's energy draining at the end of the day. Like sitting there and constantly having to just like give when you're not receiving. That's, I think that's essentially what you're talking about. Podcast is about finding happiness and finding your passions and, you know, inspiring those sort of things. What makes you happy?
Girl. Damn. Well, I mean, like, I think it depends, because it also depends on, like, what your definition of happiness is, right? Because, like, for me, I think it's, like, two different things. You have, like, the, like, happiness in the sense of, like, a, like, the feeling of, like, you, like, I don't know, like, someone has a surprise party for you or some shit, right? That's, like, immediate sort of, like, fulfillment. But then there's also the happiness that's, I think, more related to, like, contentness, where you're, that's just, like, a stable level of contentness. And I think that is way more valuable of, like, a lifestyle and, like, happiness, quote-unquote, than like the latter, you know what I'm saying? Right. Because like the latter only lasts for like a little bit of time before you're just like, wait, I'm empty again, you know? Right. Like, so I think like I like the stuff that makes me content is like, I don't know, like my friends. Again, like if I like am able to just like know that if I had a shit day, like there's like literally 15 different people I can talk to for sure that are not gonna make me like mentally drained after I talk to them. You know what I'm saying? Like that is really like just very helpful to maintain contentness.
Yeah.
Similarly, like I can have anxiety over like something. Like I actually am a very anxious person. Like if I don't like get something done on like a deadline, or like if I don't get a perfect thing, regardless, like it can be anything, but I'm just very anxious like that. And so like, and like that's okay. I think people are can be like that. Like you can get stressed and stuff. But I think like your ability to like get out of that in a certain period of time, I think is related to contentness, therefore happiness. So that's what I would say happiness is, and I guess I get it from like my people, you know? Aww. My family. To be honest with you, like I don't get necessarily like while journalism is my passion, I don't get happiness from it, and I think that's okay. Like I don't get like a contentness from it necessarily, because like I think that job and like your career is not necessarily a marker of like happiness and contentness, which is only something I recently learned actually.
Right.
Because I used to think like if I'm not doing like journalism like for the rest of my life, and like if I'm not producing fucking like, I don't know, like Pulitzer Prize winning work, like therefore I'm nothing and I'll never be happy. That's like not how that works, right? So I've just sort of like laid looser on that and like tried not to make that in my entire personality, you know?
No, yeah.
But yeah, so I guess like literally those things, like people.
No, I think it is all about the people at the end of the day. Thanks, Mina.
No problem.
Beautiful.
Damn.
Amazing. Great.
Cute shit, guys.
Welcome to Woodside Lane was co-created by Pooja Apana and Wyatt Sarkissian. Music by Sean Tyrese Avery and Milton Amparo. Presented by Apana LLC.